and welcome to this episode of the Midlands Graduate School podcast, PhD Perspectives. This is episode 4 in the series, and in this episode, we're going to talk to Michelle McLean, who is a student at the University of Birmingham. She has an interesting story to tell us, one that involves going back into education nearly 2 decades after the first time around. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
I am good. And just for our listeners who can't see what I'm seeing, Michelle is sitting in front of a wall with so many picture frames on them. Some of them have certificates, some of them have inspirational quotes. I think we've got a graduation photo on the wall as well.
That's right.
So
well
all
spotted.
of that, that's all foreshadowing of what we're going to be talking about today.
It's my wall of motivation where I sit and study.
Wow. And that's exactly what we're going to be hearing about today. What created this wall of motivation? What led into everything? So before we get into all those details, what are some things that you want people who have never met you, who are listening to you for the first time, to know about you?
What I'd like people to know about me is that even at the grand old age of 40 something, I still don't have it all figured out yet. And neither do you. What I'd like people to know about me is that I'm always learning, always evolving, and I have very much learned to go with the flow and to resist the temptation to have life all figured out and having a timeline that people say you must achieve at certain points in your life.
If
Let it go.
there was anything I needed to hear right now, that's definitely it. So
Okay.
I feel like we can end right here. I've got my motivational quote to take me through the month. But Michelle, did you always feel that way? Or is that something that you've learned in the recent past?
Definitely something that I've learned most recently. I mean, as a younger person, you sort of told that there are points in your life when you should have certain milestones, like going to university, have a serious relationship, buy your house, learn to drive. They're all life's milestones that sort of tend to happen for most people anyway, in a particular order at a particular time. And I think most of us sort of have those in the back of our mind as we're working out our life plan and trying to achieve things. And now the benefit of hindsight, I feel like I've done it all in reverse, but that's actually okay. And the main thing I've learned really is that there is a grand timing for things, and it's usually outside of our control. Things will happen when they are supposed to happen, and you just kind of got to go with that and let things happen in the right timing for you.
Absolutely. And that's brought you into a PhD, which is what you are doing
Yes,
right now with the Midlands
that's
Graduate
right.
School. Where are you in your PhD?
So I'm just coming to the end of my first year of my PhD at the University of Birmingham. This time last year, finished the Masters in Social Research. So I'm doing the 3.5 plus one. So although it's the end of year one for me, I've actually been around for 2 years in the PhD community at the University of Birmingham.
Can you tell me what your PhD is about?
Sure. How long have you got? Because it's not a straightforward one. My PhD is in criminology.
Okay.
That's the name of my pathway, but it's actually criminology with creative writing. So I'm a little bit unusual in that I sit with one foot in the School of Social Policy and I sit with another foot in the School of Film and Creative Writing. And my supervisory team, which is made up of 3 supervisors, they are spread across social policy, criminology, and creative writing. So I'm a bit of a pick a mix.
What's interesting is that before you went into your undergrad, master's, PhD, all that you said has happened in the last 5 years. You worked in the industry sector for 20 years.
Yes, I mean, I went to school and college as most people would do. And then I left college at sort of 18, 19 and went into full time work. Although I was pretty academic, I didn't really think that university was something that was available to me. Certainly there was nobody in my immediate family at the time who had been to university or any other type of further education. So it was more important to me to start to work, start to earn money, start to build up my career. So by the time I was 19, I was working full time with no intention of ever going to university. That was not in the plan.
So what happened?
Many, many years later, I became a parent. I was quite successful in my line of work and I became a parent. And I think that does prompt you really to look at your life and review your sense of self and your sense of identity. So I was going through all of that with a toddler and a baby and started to question why I had never continued my studies because I certainly had the capability and I didn't have an answer for why I hadn't done it really. And so when I had a 2-year-old and a under 1-year-old, I decided to do my undergraduate degree.
You do not hear that often.
Part-time online through a
Okay.
distance learning university. And I think slow and steady wins the race. There was no grand plan for it. There was no urgency to complete it. It was just something that I felt like I needed to do for myself. There was no plan at that time to link it to my career. My undergraduate's degree was in creative writing, which is completely unrelated to what my professional work is in. And so I just took my time and had fun with it. I actually enjoyed my undergraduate's degree. I liked the studying, I liked the essays. It was an enjoyable process for me, although obviously a very busy time
Yes.
in my life. I was still working as well. I went back to work after maternity leave with my youngest. So I was being a parent, working, doing distance learning, which takes a considerable amount of discipline as well to do your learning by distance learning. But I did graduate and I graduated with first class honours. And I think that that gave me a bit of a kick and a bit of a wake up call to say, you don't have to play at this. You could actually do something with this. Like you
Yeah.
could pursue this. But I didn't know what that looked like.
Mm.
And I applied to the University of Birmingham to do a master's in creative writing on a bit of a whim, still not sure what I was going to do with it. To my surprise, I was accepted and thought, oh, I've actually got to do this now. And continue to study part-time because obviously I was still working and the children were quite young. So I did my first master's degree at the University of Birmingham in 2022, 2023.
The moment someone says their first master's degree, you know you're settling in for a good story.
And again, going back to my earlier point about, you know, making plans, I did not ever set out to do a master's degree once, never mind twice. Like that was never in the plan. And as we're talking now and reflecting back on my academic journey so far, and it's all sort of been serendipitous events really that have sort of happened and I've gone along with and didn't really plan for, but they've been happy accidents.
Yeah.
You know, so I did the first master's degree at UOB. Again, love that process. It was obviously quite a bit harder than the undergraduate's degree, but a good challenge. And I realised that actually I could write creatively. It was something that I was quite good at. I guess getting the master's degree gave me that validation that I didn't know I needed. But then when I got the master's degree with distinction, I realised that no, I did need that validation.
Yeah.
And maybe I had been looking for that validation academically for quite a long time,
Yeah.
but I hadn't joined those dots at that point. And I came out of the back of the master's really satisfied, but thinking that I really ought to do something with this now, because by that point I'd invested quite a considerable amount of time and money.
Right.
And I thought, what are these for? Are there all these certificates just to go on my wall of motivation in my home office? Like, I need to do something with this. And I was very, very fortunate that whilst on that master's, I met somebody who I didn't know at the time was also a member of staff at the university. I met them as a fellow student. And, you know, they were, I suppose, a cheerleader to me, very motivating and encouraging. And had said to me, you know, have you ever thought about going on to do your PhD? Which I absolutely hadn't. My supervisor on my master's as well had said a similar thing, like, you know, you could do a PhD, like, you should do this. This had never occurred to me before. So I definitely benefited from having a community of women at the University of Birmingham, who very much encouraged me to take the next step and to aim for more, which was a very frightening prospect, but also exciting as well. Like thinking, could I do this? Like, could I? And then the next question I asked myself was like, but then what would I do a PhD in and what's it for?
True.
Because, like I said, there was no plan. I journal, I'm a person who journals because I'm a writer. So I did quite a lot of journaling around this, like what's it all for? And without getting too deep and woo-woo on you, I felt like whatever I did my PhD in needed to be in service to my community.
Right.
It shouldn't just be a vanity project that I bind in leather and put on the coffee table in a few years' time. Like the PhD really needs to mean something to me and to whoever I was going to serve. And I felt like my background in all these different things that I had done in my years of industry were suddenly starting to come together and mean something. So I treated creative writing as a bit of a hobby, but then was getting the validation from my academic, accreditations that I could be good at it. And I had quite a long history of volunteering in the criminal justice system as well, that I'd done from quite a long time. And I got this idea that I could combine the two things. And that's how I've ended up back at the University of Birmingham doing a PhD in criminology with creative writing.
There's so many things that you've combined that we don't necessarily hear about. Criminology and creative writing sounds like oil and water, but it sounds like you're making it happen, but also higher education at an age past the industry. That's also something you don't often hear about. And all of this comes down to one thing for me, which is representation. Did you find yourself represented in people around you, in the students around you? When you looked around you, did you see other people who had done what you think you could have done?
That's a really good question. And instinctively, I want to say no. That doesn't mean that there aren't people like me. I just probably didn't come across them. So no, I don't feel like I had the representation, but I feel like at my age, with my experience, I have a duty to be the representation for other people. Because if it's not there, go and create it. So being a mature student, coming from my background, I'm a woman of color. I come from a working class background. I didn't have any immediate relatives who had been to any kind of further education. All of those things. Looking around me, in recent years in academia, I've not yet met people like me, but we definitely should be there. There is space for us. So I'm creating that representation, I guess, for other people.
Absolutely. I remember when I joined the Center for Reproduction Research at De Montfort University, where I'm doing my PhD. I had started a PhD after working for a while. I had taken a break after my master's, thinking that I would never return to academics. And it's not 2 decades, it's not the same duration that you spent away from the university environment. But for someone who's from India, and people go straight in, they go from one to two to three, and it's all done. So all of my friends had already reached the end of their PhDs when I decided I want to go back into this. And I already felt like I was older than what was accepted and what could be accessed. And when I joined this center, I immediately made friends with someone who was 75 and had decided to do a PhD because she had spent her entire career working as a nurse, and she wanted to, similar to you, do research on something that she was passionate about, that felt like she was giving back to her community. And
Love
so,
that.
yeah, and the moment I saw that, I immediately felt, and there were not just that, there were women around in the center who had caring responsibilities, who had children, who were single mothers, who were pregnant, and all doing research, all PhD students. And usually you hear the word student and it makes you think that you need to look a certain way, act a certain way, be a certain age. But if anything, what I have seen from the diversity of experiences around me is that that's all old news. We are, as you said, creating the new tide. We're creating the new brand of what education should look like when it's actually accessible to everybody.
Yeah, I can relate. And certainly I've walked into lecture theatres and I am conscious that I'm the oldest person in the room, that everybody else is very young. I'm assuming has probably got less commitments than I have. They probably don't have children. They're probably not paying a mortgage yet. That doesn't mean they haven't got their own stresses and strains in their life. I'm not saying that younger students don't also have
Of course.
responsibilities. Of course they do. But their responsibilities are quite different to mine. And I would go into seminars and lectures and just walking around campus conscious of that. But that hasn't been a barrier to striking up conversations, making friendships, building relationships, doing group work. That hasn't got in the way. So although I'm perhaps in a slightly different cohort of student to the majority, certainly at my university, I've still found it quite welcoming and quite inclusive.
Where you are right now at the end of the first year of your PhD, the first thing you wanted to say when you came into this was that there is no timeline. You achieve things and things come and they happen at the right time, and I couldn't agree more. But you're looking forward and you're doing this PhD now. Do you feel like you have begun to achieve what you set out to achieve?
I don't know if I'll ever feel like I've achieved what I want to achieve, because I think it is my nature to want to challenge myself and do new things. So when this PhD is complete, there will probably be a new challenge waiting for me. It might not be an academic one. You know, maybe I'll climb a mountain, or maybe I'll learn a new language, or there's always something else to learn. There's always something new to experience. So for me, nothing's ever finished. That doesn't mean that I'm always eyeing up the next thing. I'm quite good at staying in the moment and staying present. But I think there will always be more to do and more that we can learn.
What are you hoping that your children watching you accomplish all of this in real time take from it, learn from you?
Now, that is something that I do think about a lot, because one thing parenting has taught me is children don't really listen to what you say, but they look at what you do. And I'm still continuing to learn that, because my children are still quite young. I want my children to see what I'm doing and for them to think that they are capable of anything that they want to do. Now, that might be a PhD. It might be something completely different, and that will be for them to discover as they get older. But I want them to think that it's possible. I want them to think that all things are possible and all opportunities are available to them. But I also want them to see that no one is going to drop accolades and rewards and money into their lap just because they want it. There is a significant degree of effort, resilience and dedication to get the things that you want out of life. And hopefully they will have seen that in what I'm doing.
You build your own wall of motivation.
Yes, certainly. Yes, you do. Yes. And I don't want them to have the same wall as I've got. They're not mini me's. They are their own people. And I would never try to influence which path they take once they become school leaders. I want them to do whatever it is that gives them a fulfilling and purposeful life. That might be academia, that might be something else. But I certainly want them to pursue things that are challenging and that people perhaps say that they can't do or shouldn't do. Those are the kind of things that I want them to go for and prove people wrong.
We're hoping that this podcast series reaches different groups of people, people who are doing the PhD right now, and perhaps share your experience with having caring responsibilities, coming into this later, and trying to juggle, as you said, different sets of responsibilities, but also, I would say, responsibilities with consequences that look quite different from when you're younger. We're also hoping that this podcast series are for people who are thinking about, should I do a PhD? Is a PhD for
Great.
me? Can I do it at an age like this? And also the third set, which I would like for you to think about, is the set of people who are family or supporters of someone who wants to do a PhD. Did you have support in doing something that, as you said, no one around you had achieved? And what does support look like?
I think being a student of any age, support is essential. And that can take all different kinds of forms. That can be with your friends and your supervisory team and all those kind of things, or it can look like something quite different. For me, as a mature student with work and children, etc., and I'm married as well, support for me has been how I have survived this process so far. Like, don't underestimate support. You could do this on your own, but it would be really, really hard, unnecessarily hard. Having my support network has literally kept me afloat since I've gone back to studying. Some of that has been in the form of practical support, like childcare and school pickups and things like that, very, very practical things. Some of it has been in the form of just keeping me in good supply of tea and biscuits when I'm writing an essay or, an article or something. Sometimes it's in the form of texts from friends or family who maybe don't even really understand what I'm studying. but want to support me. A motivational text message. One of my best friends, how she supports me is by completely ignoring me when I have deadlines.
Oh, that's fair.
Because,
That's fair.
yeah, because I will call her and procrastinate and be chatting on the phone about absolutely nothing of use. And she'll say to me, "Have you finished your essay?" And if I say no, she'll put the phone down. She won't speak to me until I've done my essay. That is support. It's accountability, you know? So sometimes it's cups of tea, sometimes it's friends not answering your call when you're due to hand an assignment in. Support can take all different types of forms.
I'm gonna have to tell my best friend that one because she does pick up the phone and I do waste both of our time, so
And also, I'm very, very lucky with my family, my husband, even my children. They all support me in different ways. And there's a lot of emotional support as well. Like if I'm maybe a little bit anxious or a little bit stressed out, they're quite good at spotting that. My mum might rock up at my front door with a little bunch of daffodils because she knows it cheers me up and the colour on my desk is joyful. My husband might just take care of all the domestic responsibilities for a few days, so I haven't got that on my plate. There's lots of different ways that I'm given support, but definitely without that support, this academic journey would look quite different.
Do you remember your undergraduate graduation ceremony?
Yes, I do remember it. I remember feeling quite emotional. It was like, oh, I've done it. I've done it. But as is typical for me, about an hour after the ceremony ended, I needed to get back to pick my children up from school
Of course.
because some of my nearest and dearest had other commitments on that day. So it was like I had my moment of glory, and then life comes at you real fast. It was straight back to reality. So that was a good reminder of yes, you've got your degree, but you've still got all of these things to take care of as well. So don't get a big head.
Then you did two more masters. So do you remember those graduation ceremonies?
So my first master's, I had my graduation and my children came to that one. They were
Oh,
a little
nice.
bit older. So my children came to my graduation for my creative writing master's and it was a fantastic day. It was great to have them on campus and introduce them to people. I'm sure the ceremony was probably a little bit boring in parts for them, but they understood the significance of the occasion. So I love that. And one of the photographs on my wall of motivation that you've spotted is in my cap and gown with my husband and my children. So that was really, really important that they were able to share that with me. The second master's degree, like I said, was sort of a happy accident as a result of my PhD funding.
Oh,
So
right,
I
of
hadn't
course.
set out, yes, I hadn't set out with the intention to go and do another master's degree, but I recognized that moving into a new discipline, there were some skills that I was lacking. And although I didn't relish the idea of doing another master's, I knew that it would give me the best start to the PhD. And I wanted to make the PhD as easy for myself as possible. So I thought, do the master's. Yes, it's another year, but we're not in a rush. And it's going to give you those research skills that will help make the PhD journey smoother. So I did the master's in social research full time in 1 year. But for me, it was never about that master's. The master's was a stepping stone to the PhD. I see it as part of a bigger thing. So
And
if
you're on
I
your way.
survive till the end of this PhD, I will have the celebrations then.
You're on your way.
Definitely.
You're on your
Yes.
way. I have a question for you that's not directly relevant, but I'm really curious to hear your thoughts. You said you're
Okay.
combining creative writing and criminology. And creative writing, like anything creative, it comes from a well of personal energy, emotional energy. And it sounds like you're using that as a tool in your PhD, which one can call professional work as well. What does it mean for you to put something so deeply personal into the professional side of your life? How do you keep that well from running dry? What does creativity look like for you when it's just for you?
That's a terrific question. I lost my link to my creativity whilst I was doing the social research masters because I was deep in my timetable and essays, and I became quite grumpy at times. And through my journaling and through my reflection, I realized that when I am not writing, I am not myself. Writing is an important part of who I am, even if no one ever sees it. Even if no one ever knows I'm doing it. So, for some people, it might be going to the gym or spending time with family or playing an instrument. But
Yeah.
for me, writing is who I am. It's part of my expression of myself. So when I wasn't able to do that for a year because of time and capacity, I was restless. I didn't feel like myself. Now I'm able to do it as part of my PhD. I feel like I am returning to myself. I feel like this is who I'm supposed to be and what I was always supposed to do. And every day I come to my desk and I start work, I feel lucky and privileged that I am able to do something that is a hobby as part of my work, that I'm able to do something that fulfills me as part of my academic study. Like, I feel so fortunate that my studying has a huge component that is something that I would do anyway, that is joyful to me. I
Yeah.
feel incredibly lucky.
What does it mean for you to have that hobby, passion, all of that funded and supported by a graduate school?
Oh, it's incredible. I never, ever, ever thought that I would have this sort of opportunity. And going back to my earlier point about being grateful, that's part of my gratitude that not only do I get to do this, but I am financially supported to be able to do it. Like, I feel so lucky that I'm able to do this work. And it's a source of motivation for me that I will do this, I will complete this, and this work will matter and it will make a difference because it has to. This isn't just a passion project for me. It's not just, oh, you've got a nice hobby and you were lucky to get some funding to pay for your hobby. We've moved out of hobby territory now. This is my work. Like, this is what I'm supposed to do. And I'm just so lucky that I got the funding to do so.
Did you always feel that way about writing? Has it always been this important to you, even during the 2 decades when you were working?
Writing's always been there. I didn't always have the language for what it meant to me. It was just a thing that I did. Nobody ever saw it. It's become bigger over time. It's become a bigger part of who I am and it's part of my psyche. And now I wouldn't be without it. Like, even if I wasn't studying, even if I wasn't doing all the different projects that I'm involved in now, I would still get up every day and I would write something in my little notebook, handwritten, pop it back in the drawer for no one to see. You
Yeah.
know, I would still continue to do that. It's hugely important to me. And I think creative expressions in whatever form are important when you're doing something like studying. It really helps to have an outlet
Yeah.
that you can express yourself creatively. You know, singing in the shower, learning to play piano on your iPad or whatever it is. I think creative expression
Yeah.
with no intention, no goal, can be so good for our well-being as students.
100%. And my final question for you is, you're radiating joy for sure, but also contentment in who you are and the person that you display yourself as. I'm not going to assume that you've always had this kind of confidence in the way that you presented yourself, but it sounds to me like this whole journey has also been a journey of identity and
Yeah.
self-awareness. And this is me, and this is who I am. Can you tell
You've got
me
that
a little bit
absolutely
about it?
right.
Yeah, because you're resonating that. Tell me some more about that.
I think it comes with age and experience. I think as a younger person, I very much cared what other people thought, and maybe aspects of my life were performative. They were for the acceptance and approval and agreement of other people. Now that has gone. That has gone. And that just comes with maturity, I think. I do things for me. I do things with good intentions in my heart and hope that I'm doing the right things in the right way. I hold my hands up when I don't. And I think I just do things not worrying about what other people will think about it. I do them for myself. And I think if you have that attitude, you can't go far wrong.
If you had a time machine and you went back to the Michelle that first went to college all of those years ago, and you just wanted to give her a little memo that things would turn out way different than she thought, and sounds like happy as well, what would you say?
I would tell a younger me to follow her heart and follow her passions, to ignore the dates on the calendar and the milestones that are supposed to happen in life and just go with what feels right at the time, and you won't fail.
I think I speak for everyone listening when I say that I need some of that energy in my life. So thank you.
I'll send some your way. Take a look at my wall of motivation before you leave. That might give you some inspiration.
I do. I will. I am. Thank you so much, Michelle. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for listening to the episode. Make sure that you checked out the last three episodes of this series. There's more to come, so I'll see you in the next one.